Hello, this is Bob Dobbs. I'm with Cameron McEwen, and we're doing episode number 72 of our series on Donald Trump and the tech body and other stuff that's happening. And we are looking at my text, and we're at the middle of page 150, where I say, middle of page 151.
Yep.
Yeah, where I say, this is after the blue part. So this is the major text. Our communication environments from the printing press on were layered over and through our older linguistic environments. Humans were inevitably servo mechanisms of those massive media landscapes, media in quotes. The satellite technology, both an interior and external landscape, was the last of that kind. As digital communication environments developed, they gradually shrunk those massive techno environments and inaugurated a new kind of autonomy for our chemical body in relation to the previous scapes. Those scapes?
That's a good word.
Yeah. Then I say, now, radio-TV-newspaper-bookscapes, so I'm elaborating on the word scapes. Now, radio-TV-newspaper-bookscapes are in, now, those radio-TV-newspaper-bookscapes are inside your personal mobile, tiny and invisible. These older media become afterimages or memes, as well as huge bureaucracies to preserve the wealth they'd created. They don't go away, just as ye old speech never disappeared. They are as real and insistent as our own bodies. They must be fed and housed. However, what once were large corporate vestments now are small enough to be considered as organs, like lungs, that are new additions to our archetypal chemical body and astral body. So I have chemical body and astral body is kind of given by first nature, you know. Even though science has overlaid the description of our physical bodies with chemical body knowledge, which you actually talk about, you know, from 200 years ago. And astral body is religion and human aspiration, faith, hope, charity, and weird psychic experiences. To what people think are not physical. So I say that, as that's pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, although to me it seems like, number one, a little bit of a new idea in the pamphlet, and number two, it seems like a very important idea that we should... maybe talk about a little bit.
Okay, what is it about the pamphlet? Why did you say the word pamphlet?
I said it seems to me that marks a kind of turning point in the pamphlet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It, this idea of bureaucracies developing as scapes, I like that idea very much. And I really didn't give much thought to it when I read the pamphlet before, and I can see that what you're going to get to is a different kind of organicism.
Yeah. So I would say about the scapes, what the revolutionaries, anarchists, right, left, center missed is that the old media environments would be bureaucratized. They've become part of the collective wealth, right, and part of our memories.
Yeah.
So you have huge employment in museums and movie, Hollywood, Disneyland archives. Now, what is it? Hollywood, they got in New York City, they got the huge Museum of Broadcasting, and they got all this stuff. Now, that is what can occupy people's attention, all this old media. And it's all there. They're growing, these bureaucracies. What would you topple today? Nobody's going to listen to, you know, okay, you're going to get me a job so I can have better food or get not starve and get off welfare or something. You know, you're going to kick out the capitalists. It's so puny, that enemy, because you got this psychic weight on people of all the wealth. You know, people made lots of money, in Hollywood, the guys that hijacked the circus of the movie medium, but they created a collective language like our verbal language. It's a huge storehouse of stuff that everybody owns, you know what I mean? And then now we got this digital media, and everybody can, they got whole channels dedicated to this stuff. So the wealth is way beyond chemical body kings and queens and Rockefellers. You know what I mean? That's what people are
so
not.
You seem to be talking about a different economic system.
Yeah.
It's not capitalism. It's not socialism. It's something else that's, number one, it's alive. And number two, it's not seen because it's so big.
Yeah.
It's so ubiquitous.
And the young kids, they go to college and they're getting book knowledge, but their real task is to find out how much of the past wealth in movies, TVs, radio, music, and everything else, and museums and Gutenberg arts, all that wealth, they have to figure out, go get familiar with it. So basically, you got to put them in a tube, like in the Matrix, for, say, from 18 to 28, so they can catch up. And that's what they are doing anyways. A lot of these young kids, they watch old movies, they watch everything, all this old stuff. They spend about 10 years just finding out what happened, right? And so it's a new kind of education, a new university, actually, that the young person has to go through. And, of course...
But are they graduating, or are they just... they're going to the classes, but at the end of the day, they're not getting it.
There's no schooling or pattern recognition about it, but that's what McLuhan offered. This is the new curriculum, is about what these media archives are, what these escapes are. So he created the new curriculum. But I just wanted to say is that, so you have also the disservices of these media. They broke up the family. McLuhan said, if you have a car, you can't have a nuclear family. So that goes back to the 20s. So anyways, even the description of what America's social life is about, or the Western world, the church, country, religion, and family stuff, is not really applicable to how people live. So many people, they don't have parents, they don't have any income, so they get a McDonald's job and or some cheap job, and then they still got to get, as part of their mental health, they have to feel that they're tuning into something. And what is this about? What has humanity done? And so they went to Blockbuster 20, 30 years ago, right? Everybody would go there the weekend, get all the videos. So they're always looking at stuff with their girlfriends and boyfriends and all that while dealing with their kids that they got pregnant. All this chaos of trying to keep the chemical body survived going, while the real pressure is finding out what happened and what am I supposed to do and what opportunities are there for me to engage these new bureaucracies. That's the new employment agencies.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I have to. I don't have direct comments on it because I haven't given it enough thought, but I think it's a whole new way of talking about this stuff, because there's a lot of words that...
Yeah, it just occurred to me. You know what McLuhan's word for this, what I'm talking about? Mini-states. He started talking about mini-states in the late 60s. And, you know, the music industry was a mini-state. The military is a mini-state. Intelligence activities were mini-states. Rotary was a mini-state. Everything was a mini-state. That would be the beginning of the bureaucracies, but they were more implosive and more digitized and computerized gradually, but they're still there. And now there's a problem with the digitizing of these mini states, so there's less employment there almost.
Uh-huh. I think I hear you saying that there's a kind of evolution going on where these mini states / archives / scapes begin as recognizable figures, but that's a kind of a primitive protozoa, and they then evolve into other kinds of figures that we don't know how to relate to yet.
Okay,
even though they're Go ahead.
Yeah, that reminds me. So the electronic reality and the digital reality impels great participation. So what is motivating a lot of young people is to make an impact in these old scapes. So they try to get into movies, or they try to get into video or to music. They want to be in there. So while the kids are studying or just learning all the backlog of media experiences they can get, all the mini states, they are trying to be part of it and create new stuff. So you have an incredible popular creativity going on, and only one or two have a career out of it. But it doesn't stop locally people being in bands or making videos or having little collectives and trying to create something, right? They want to contribute to the collective languages these scapes are. So that distracts everybody. How are you going to get anybody to pay attention to any of the old Gutenberg programs of education or revolution or improvement or humanism, whatever, all those things that the Gutenberg era thought they were doing? The kids are too distracted. And they're not even kids compared to their parents in terms of experience. You know, they're not. You can't even call them children anymore. They are little bodies that are absorbing. Their dangling ganglia is eating all these scapes and mini states. And that's where we live today. And politics and any of these normal institutional things have nothing to say to that. They don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
So that makes our world more a world of anarchy, as McLuhan said. Anarchy on the disservice level.
So am I right that what you're suggesting with all this is that we're in a new kind of evolution where language itself is evolving, and problem that people have is that think of themselves and think of the world in terms of a language that no longer applies.
Right.
And now they have to learn a new language, but going from language to language is a very difficult thing.
And it's all, and I was talking to somebody the other day how, you know, a kid can look up anything really fast. So compared to previous cultures, you might as well say, you can Google anything, and kids don't even want to learn anything of the Gutenberg world because it's all there in Google. You might as well, since they can find out something in 5 seconds, they've got ESP compared to 100, 200 years ago where nobody knew anything and take a while to read one book. Look how slow the input of information was compared to today. So we're in a very... you could take the most science fiction or New Age fantasy of Atlantis or some retrieved utopia of ESP. We live that today, and we don't have the proper language for that because it's not old-fashioned ESP, but it is close to that, but something even more extraordinary. In other words, we're in such a miraculous situation that everybody's mute, deaf and dumb, as McLuhan says, right, in front of this.
And so, isn't it the case that 200 years ago there was no width to people's knowledge, but there was depth? And now what's happened is that there's tremendous width, unlimited width, but almost no depth.
Yeah, and you get depth by having a framework which would come from language, but it doesn't come from verbal language. And that's what I see we're trying to do. We're trying to present the problem. Knowing and exploring the problem gives you a language.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, you have the questions, not the answers. And it's not verbal questions, so you have to use that. But we're always talking beyond the words that we're addressing, right? It's a law that we're not going to use words that I got to use with you. You know, we're trying to get past that. And all the arts are about that all through the last 100 years. They're all trying to communicate beyond the canvas or beyond the symphony, beyond whatever Gutenberg media they're working with. They're trying to show this new communications going on, new effects, new vibrations. And that is what politicians should talk about, or anybody who pretends that they have a program for the population to create some kind of social order or something, you know? That's why when I went on the radio, I was running. I used to call, I'm running for King of Canada, you know? I'm presenting my program, and I'm the only one talking about what's going on. I'm the only one who knows what's going on, so I should be king. through the authority of knowledge, quoting McLuhan. But that's what we need, better kings or candidates for this.
Definitely, definitely. Well, people don't understand. It's not a question of not understanding a language. It's a question of not even recognizing that a new language is needed.
Yeah, so, and that they're engaging the new language by wanting to participate and make videos and do whatever they do with all the media they have out there in their Palm Pilot 20 years ago. What do they got now? A smartphone? What are people using today? What do they call? Is it usually just a phone? Is that what everything's on now?
I guess. I really don't understand that because I'm too old to be comfortable doing everything on my phone.
Yeah, and I don't even have one. So I've been removed. But anyways, whatever they use, I mean, they have a lot. The apps, I guess. Let's just call it the app economy. The app and keeping up with it and trying it out. And then the old fogies like Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, you know, they're old archetypes already. It's all people trying to communicate. And you look at the TikToks. There's millions made every day. That's language. That's people participating and communicating, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And they're
absolutely.
Usually mocking the old, what are they called, though? The old media, digital media, the old, forget the term.
Scapes.
What? Yeah, scapes.
Scapes.
But what do they call the...
Legacy.
Yeah, well, legacy's that's a pop culture term. What? That's funny. Just media. All the media. But what is analog? That's the word I'm looking for. The analog media. That's what everybody is yelling at. The analog media. You know, news. The quote legacy media. All the old archetypes. TV, radio. And computers and that, which don't exist in the Android meme. The kids don't grow up with television. Croker has it down when he calls it a screenal economy. And maybe other people did too in the 90s. But it's a screenal existence, right? The screen. And it's not limited to TV or your computer. It's some floating, weird environment, which I call the Android meme, but now it's become the tech body, which is something... even more strange. So, yeah, I was trying to – the legacy, the analog media is what people are fighting. And those analog media are not there. They're fighting after images. So we're communicating because we don't have up-to-date perception. We're fighting specters constantly. And that is what seems to be worth participating in. The people don't see them see that as specters, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's what McLuhan was already talking, I believe, in the 50s. He used the word haunting.
That's right.
And
he used the word specter, so, too. Now, when we talk like I'm talking, and then I have someone like you who understands it and then supports it so we can keep moving forward and trying to articulate it, McLuhan's language is so obviously the best stuff. As an anchor to refer to, because like he would go and look in Finney's wake and see that what he was thinking with Eric was already in the wake. Well, whatever we come up with, we can find stuff in McLuhan where he's saying the same thing, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And all that stuff in all his books, nobody knows. Nobody uses it. Like you've been writing McLuhan stuff for 20 years, say. There's so much in McLuhan to entertain you, to excavate. That's another thing, right?
Yeah.
People, it's incredible how little people know what McLuhan did. So
there's a huge sort of trench in between the little use that's made of McLuhan and what could be made of McLuhan. And it's not a question of reading a biblical script. It's a question of learning how to question which was sort of his way of navigating.
Yeah, he knew that was his way of moving beyond the Gutenberg world and the Gutenberg words. And and so the what you were saying there, the you even his way of just skimming the surface and categorizing things in passing, like say streaking. I always like to cite that one, the streaking thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surface, bubbling, foamy world. It didn't require depth analysis, but it did require understanding you were in the well of loneliness or the well of tactile acoustic space. So visual anchors aren't going to work. So he could talk about everything and skim over everything. And so I've heard different people through the years say, you know, I can't, you know, I don't get anything out of McLuhan. It's popcorn. They're trying, so they go back and they try to write novels or books. Okay, they don't get that the depth that they are nostalgic for is solved by the way McLuhan handled the information pattern recognition pressures. You know what I mean? That's what he was.
Yes, sir.
He understood how to respond. So he's giving you questions or how to talk about it without getting bogged down with looking for categories that you're going to worship, you know? So that's where they say postmodern authors deal with the surface. They don't try to have totality. What is it? They don't try to be totalistic, right? Which was a Gutenberg thing. They try to wrap it all up, which many they accuse Pound and Joyce of being trying to be totalistic, but I don't think they were. But postmodern studies understood, or Baudrillardian people, they understood that it's all just partial, pattern recognition. And so we're not trying to write the book that sums it all up. They're not looking for a theory of everything. The actual theory of everything is Finnegan's Wake, which, you know, does the macro and the micro, the general relativity and the subatomic or the quantum. It's done by the Wake. If you want to have that after image of the book arriving, remember the world will end in a book. What's that quote from the 19th century guy? The book is what the world will end in a book, said Mallarmé or somebody. Do you know that?
Yeah,
quote?
It's Mallarmé.
Yeah, what is it? The world.
Something to end in a book.
Yeah, that is what Pound and Eliot. Or Joyce put on that impulse, but they recognized, or at least Joyce, I think, recognized he's not going to do that. You don't need to end it in a book. And, of course, McLuhan comes along and says in the 50s, what is the role of the book? And he figured out how to use the book among other media. And so he is the last writer, and so he's ironic for people because he's dismissing the book as he writes it. But you've got to understand that the book is just there to anchor that part of your history and your brain that was conditioned by the Gutenberg galaxy, and that's a conditioned response. So you meet that. You bring visual space back into the integrating of all the senses and therefore all its extensions. So he used the book perfectly. And he often get other people to write them for him, right?
That's right.
And so I see that as the proper way to respond to what's going on. So it's not only that he knew what was going on, he knew how to respond on the world of communication in how to go beyond, I got to use words for you. McLuhan was not stuck in the words. So it's incredible when you see today, over the last 10 years, say, there's been a revival in a certain way in journalism of people quoting McLuhan, especially in the social media world, saying, oh, this McLuhan, he speaks to our world. And they don't know anything what he said. And they think it's the medium is the message or global theater or something. It's a few trivial things. And they this guy is really close. We could, he's a guide for us. Let's go on beyond McLuhan and do what he wasn't allowed around to live and to see. And yet there's so much in his books that you won't be able to come up with anything once you became aware of the other stuff. You just keep quoting McLuhan. in all the variety that you do.
Yeah, it's a different use of language.
Yeah. That's why it might look tedious. If someone looked at your inventory, what is he doing? He's categorized, he's doing an Aristotle of everything that could be talked about. But you keep doing it because the fun of it is you're doing this surface pattern recognition.
Right, right. Trying to bring out how the depth is in the surface.
Yeah, yeah. And those terms are irrelevant. It's there, whatever you call it, depth, call it surface. It is, I like his term, it's pattern recognition, which is what we live by, and that's the participatory demand on everybody, is to keep up with making a pattern recognition that works for you. And then you see if it relates to your community or whatever mediascape you think is important that you want to match with. So if you look at this British paper, I think it's called the Daily Mail, they got 50 damn stories on the side about millions of stars. There's so many TV shows, so many movies. You know, I don't know any of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And you just look at all these nobodies who are famous for a millisecond, and then they disappear, but they are in the content on the side of the Daily Mail page every day, all these people. I mean, what is it that Warhol came up with in the 70s? So in the 60s, he said everybody would be famous for 15 minutes. So what he said in the 70s was, in 15 minutes, everybody will be famous. That's where we got. There's so many people that have jobs in the different entertainment media, including the influencers just on YouTube or Instagram, wherever they are in the digital landscape. There's lots of people having careers and being famous for a little while there and being influential and then getting burned out. Most of them end up getting burned out, and that's where what we're talking about is a means for overcoming being burned out. It's just thousands of people every day getting somewheres. But there's always the anxiety that, of course, you're going to be kicked out pretty soon. So where's your security? Where's your economic security? Where's your sense of accomplishing something that will be recognized, and then you get a gig at a university or something? None of that's there anymore. And you actually have the baby boomers and now the Generation X. They're the old fogies. They're the ancient regime. They hold on to their jobs and don't let the new generations come in and pretend they're doing something. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the definition of the teachers union right there.
Yeah, yeah. They remember the ancient regime, right? The feudal age aristocrats were trying to hold on to their power as mercantilism took over in the effects of the printing press. And they end up having 10-year-olds being generals in their armies. It was all futile. Well, you've got that's one of the biggest hypocrisies of the baby boomers. Whatever fantasies they have about what they did as a generation, they are actually, quote, fascists of imposing their stupid professional bias, or the fact society wants somebody to babysit all these kids and or provide stupid clerk jobs for people. This is over the last 30 years. And so the baby boomers were the guys that held the fort of obsolescence. And they're the biggest. And so then they come along 10, 15 years ago complaining about the kids and how stupid they are and all that. And they don't recognize their own hypocrisy.
Yeah, interesting. So that's what might be called a socio-political dimension to the rearview mirror.
Yeah, it's escape almost. They're shepherds. McLuhan said we're all becoming shepherds, you know, just tending the sheep, the media, and the media are people. So more and more we just sit on some part of the bureaucratic scape and stay there as long as possible.
Yes. Yeah, the image I'm getting is the way photographs used to be developed in a medium, in a dark room.
Yeah.
And the film would be floating in a liquid.
Yeah.
And the scapes are like film that is being simultaneously preserved and developed in a liquid.
In liquid capital. Liquid capital is what they finance, the currency is, right? It's we don't know if it's cash, debt, or what, but it's, quote, liquid. That's their term for it, right? So the liquid
is this
electrified ether liquid that we're floating in, that the negative.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're on top of your game today, Bob.
Hey, what's the date here? July 13th. What am I channeling here? I'm on top of my game. This is not game. This is science, man. Anyways, yeah, this is good. Well, my stuff is this, reading this paragraph blew me up, and your enthusiasm for the word scapes doesn't take me long to get going if somebody likes what I'm doing.
Well, for me, I'm understanding the pamphlet at this point in a way that demands that I need to go back and reread again.
Wow.
I've already done this a couple times.
Wow, that's great.
But this is an interesting insight for me.
Yeah, so we are in the Android Meme Phase 2 chapter. Is that what
we're in?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yep. Android Meme Phase 2. I'm just going to go up and look at the beginning of my inventory. So, we're in, just to review them, Global Village, Global Theater, Global Membrane, or Android Meme Phase 1. Android Meme Phase 2 goes up to 159, so we're coming up to the fifth phase, which is difficult to talk about, the anthropomorphic physical, the AP. That's going to be interesting, what I can communicate to that and whether I can inspire you with whatever I'm trying to get at there. And then the last chapter is the tech body and President Donald Trump. You know, the whole presidency, which McLuhan's definition was birth perfect, the automated presidential surrogate is a superlative nobody. But it's like Donald Trump, by being a clown president or a non-president or an anti-environment to the White House, he is the memory. He's a walking museum now. People go to see him, right? He's the only guy who get a big audience. And he's not allowed even to be in government.
But hasn't Biden kind of transformed into a kind of mirror image of all that? Isn't he, a clown president who's...
Well, I wrapped that up real good. Trump, because it was a world beyond speech, beyond words, he knew he didn't need words to talk. That began with George Bush Jr. winking at the audience during his debates with Gore. You know, while Gore was going on with his verbality and he created the internet and all this nonsense, and all George Bush would do would wink at the audience. That really was commented on. It was a big deal. So he did it first, and of course he was a guy who didn't read the newspaper. He was a media columnist.
Couldn't read the newspaper.
What?
Couldn't read it.
Yeah, he couldn't read it, and it turned out he was charismatic not to be able to read it. Obama was a reaction to that. They're trying to retrieve something. But they put in the slave. They take their press class, the blacks, and made him a president. That got attention for a while. But then his image got lost in all the responsibilities of what the White House is, the actual control of the whole world. So it always looks like a dictatorship or a bad scene, right, and has to have all these wars. So then Trump comes in. And he doesn't bother finishing his sentences, okay? So Biden actually outdoes Trump, and I've said to you before, what does he do? He speaks in syllables. He can hardly finish his syllables. And did you see what he said the other day? He said, God bless the Queen. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I saw it.
So he knows that Queen Elizabeth is still alive. That's a secret. People don't know that. I talked to Ian about that. But anyways, it's incredible, right? What he says, what he does. I saw another footage, and this is all just surface. You just go here, there, go and look for something. and you'll see somebody will show you a little image, and you'll see there's Biden with the president of Turkey, and he has a piece of paper, and he's looking at it to see who he's sitting with. And the president of Turkey stared at him like, what is this guy? This is not even a human being I'm looking at. Can you imagine all these people go to the White House and they think it's some solid place, if they're from a third world place or a bit behind the speed we live at, and they go in there, this sacred place, and they got this fucking nothing there, this blob. Everybody goes through a crisis, I bet, when they go to that White House. So Biden is completing the Trump image.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, there's not this big, and then you actually have journalists saying, well, he brought back normalcy. He brought back decency. He's a nice guy. The way they describe him is unbelievable. They ignore what the tech body aspect of him. He's part of the tech body, too. So, anyways, you know, it's all anthropomorphic physical, projecting that there are still humans here, or chemical bodies, shall we say. It's a better way to say it. Because the human we are is engaging all the scapes. So what do you call that? What is that? And that's a multi-bodied situation. So this is a change in the pamphlet. I'm moving into the relevance of the five bodies, right? Which goes past McLuhan's sensory framework.
Yeah, but isn't the sensory framework in McLuhan misunderstood as being literal?
Yeah.
Right. The senses are not the five senses because, for example, he'll say, well, TV is tactile or symphonic music is visual. Right. And so the senses aren't literal in McLuhan at all.
They're synesthesia, at least. They're mixed up. They're not frozen categories. He even used to say, I believe there's only four senses. He didn't even agree with the five sensory model.
So taste and smell he tended to bring together.
Yeah, and also tactility was not a sense. So you had the eye, ear, smell, and movement. And smell and taste he put together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he left out tactility, which was not a sense. But the using bodies is where the senses evolved to, I guess. They each have their own landscape.
Yes. Don't you have a problem here where you're not using the word body to mean, physical bodies in space-time? You're using body in a whole other sense, and that other sense has to do with this whole other language, and the whole other language is what is not understood, even while it's being lived out.
Yeah, and it's actually in people's music and their lyrics and their videos, they express that awareness, but they don't know they're doing that.
Correct.
The way they make their creations, video creations, are very accurate in a post-fitting and wake world, you know, when you know that, when you understand that. But they don't know that. And so when they get interviewed, they're embarrassed. They don't know how to talk about their work. And
correct.
So that would be why a lot of people have gone into the woke religious talk about certain political correct values. That's the only talking that seems to get by or make you look like you're up on something and you're intelligent. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So wokeness is speech, and the Gutenberg arts turn into rigid religions,
right.
Iconic.
It supplies a ground.
Yeah, that's what it is.
For them.
Yeah, it's a ground. It's an ersatz anti-environment, ersatz ground. So, you know, if you can get people to listen to what we're saying, there's a lot of work that we're implying that one needs to engage to see why you are inspired by what we're saying to you, why it makes sense to you. See?
Yep.
If you listen to us, we make sense.
That's right. but not the problem people have is that it's.
Oh, you blipped out. Yeah, we got to keep this recording. Let's see. Hello? Yeah, that's still going. Okay. I'm going to have to call Cameron. Looks like you got knocked off. Recording. So, can you speak?
Hello, hello.
Yeah, I want to check. I think I'm going to check the other one. Just a second. Okay, say hello.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. Okay, so everything is going. So what were you saying? You were saying something.
I was saying that because the new language is not understood, words like body and like sense are understood in the old language and are therefore misunderstood.
Yeah, I used to say that, you know, television was adding a new organ or a lung, and then Deleuze and Guattari started talking about bodies without organs. Do you know about that?
No, I've never read that.
Yeah, so they had that slang, and then Croker flipped it, as he did with all the postmodern archetype guys. He said it's organs without bodies, and so that was better. That was like the ear floating around. He has lots of stuff on the floating ears, the floating tongues, the floating clitorises, you know, and it's more parts of the body, the splayed body, it's been blown apart, the chemical body image. So, yeah, mm-hmm. That's what they were trying to get at, what was inadequate of even using the senses in the word bodies. I was aware of that.
Yeah.
Well, it's like not only am I, if I write something, it's surface pattern recognition. I'm speaking surface pattern recognition here.
Yes.
I'm using the words, you know.
Yeah, you're like a parent that's trying to get the child to speak. Right?
And yeah.
So say mommy, say daddy, right?
And if they get anywhere near it, I accept. Oh, yeah, that's good. Very good. So, yeah, I when I am, quote, teaching this stuff on my radio show, and the people get involved and they start get inspired and they think they learned it, they then tell me what they learned, and it's usually way off, but yeah. I usually say, very good, very good. Because you can't...
Baby steps.
Yeah, there's baby steps. You can't get them to get it right away. Just for them to attempt to say something that they feel is inadequate, but you support the effort, that's the probing, and we're all in that condition. So
I can't condemn it. And you have a wonderful line at the bottom of 151 where you say, that's our modern hospital.
Yeah, that's right? our modern hospital.
So the modern hospital is literally everything.
Yes, that's right. And that's why the doctor throughout the 20th century became the high priest. That became the new religion. the secular religion was worshiping medicine, and that this hospital environment was going to save you. And it's become a ghetto. It's ridiculous what it's doing, because the hospital medicine is not done by doctors anymore. It's done by our environments. And McLuhan said that. They said media are anesthetics. They're medicinal. They are therapy for people. If you didn't have these media environments, you wouldn't be able to handle the previous media environments or the newer ones. See? So media environments are drugs.
Yep.
The drugs that we use for the chemical body have been replaced by the media environment. So then if you have a car accident, you lose your identity dealing with all these new environments, and the global theater hospital and all the environments that are your medications for them, if you collapse in that, then you go to the old-fashioned hospital and you get ripped apart. You go to the chemical body hospital, and that's dangerous in there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the relationship between the hospitals you're talking about is the same as the relationship between the languages that we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got to use old-fashioned hospitals to treat your problem.
Yeah.
Now, there's also incredible services in the hospital environment. We all know that, because you can't say something's bad or good. There's services and disservices. But overall, because we don't have a poet of the present, a means to frame the minds for people, or whatever their after image of their mind is, then all the environments tend to be disservices. The services are lost. People don't know what the service is anymore, and that's another part of their alienation and frustration. They aren't getting the satisfactions where they think they should. Their chemical body's not getting those satisfactions. They're getting other kinds of satisfactions they're not even aware of, which are we would call addictions. They have to keep texting. They have to keep up. See, can you see the whole mandate of participation that came in with radio, first the telegraph, then that would create the Florence Nightingale thing, and then you have the radio environment, the TV involvement, and hyper-participation mystique, and it all led to people now walking along looking at the instant of pattern recognition coming at them on their cell phones, on their smartphones, and they're engaging it, and they're totally preoccupied. It's the ultimate expression of, McLuhan said, the participatory effect of electric media, the involving nature of it. I don't think he saw it come to this 24/7 of endless monitoring and keeping up with what you think you have to keep up with.
Well, I'm not so sure. I think he did see that. He tried to surf that environment.
And he did. But to have people walking around day in and day out, you know why smoking has diminished? I don't see anybody smoking anymore, hardly here. And that's because before, as body language took over due to movies and people started to communicate post-verbally with their body language, so they would take postures with their smoking gestures and postures in their smoking habits, there was also an insecurity in people. They need to be holding on to something as they were floating in the discarnate state. So they held on to the cigarette.
Sure.
Once you got the cell phone and everybody's walking around holding that, you don't need a cigarette. So the cell phone replaced the cigarette for that kind of security.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
And it's also replaced gum.
Yeah. That's a good. Yeah. Because they can talk. They can chew the cud right there while they're walking along.
Yeah.
So the where are we at here? That's our modern hospital. Is that all I say? No more blue. Yep, that's all I say.
Yeah, well, that's such a great line. You didn't want to spoil it by going on.
Yeah, that's it, and I'm pointing out that our hospital is not the building known as hospital.
Yeah, of course.
So everybody is engaged in helping everybody else by giving them attention, just by answering their email. So everybody becomes a therapist for everybody else, and McLuhan said that started with Freud and the psychiatric couch. People needed an audience for their new post-chemical body experiences, so they got the audience with the psychiatrist. Now everybody's an audience for everybody else, and that can make people think, well, everybody's contributing. This will be unconscious. Therefore, why not have a guaranteed income? Why not be, quote, be communist? We're all participating in this global crisis where we all need to help each other, talk to everybody, and comfort everybody in all different means of media communication. That's where you've got, we've turned into Aboriginal tribe here, where everybody shares the same whatever they get, right, in their hunting.
Yeah, yeah. But the we've turned into an Aboriginal tribe,
yeah,
but in a nostalgic sense.
Yeah, we don't live that.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know how to do it. We know how to kind of wish for it in a stumbling around kind of way.
And so the kids, the millennials and younger, are that's their wish. To the degree this media myth that they're all kind of just hoping to be looked after with some kind of income or being on welfare and all that, I remember the old story 10 years ago, the Japanese students wouldn't leave their bedrooms. The Japanese people, the kids in their homes, they wouldn't leave. Remember that story?
Sure.
So.
Well, that's being lived out by the whole Japanese nation, right? They're not creating babies. They're not finding a way to replicate their society.
Right. So everybody wanting to be taken care of is this nostalgia for the Aboriginal. Because, you know, McLuhan's important point that television was way more dangerous than the bomb or even famines because they come and go. And if they kill you, you're gone. But for those that are still here, TV, he said, is here for another 1,000 years. This psychic pressure of keeping up in the information environment is the real plague, the real cause of all the ailments that leads to ill health due to eating and drinking too much or relying on junk food or coffee or something. The incredible ill health of the population is due to the psychic pressure of the digital android meme. It's a bigger plague than physical plagues. So what's interesting, there's also a huge service, and that's why I put my part of the chart under ecstasy. And my part of the chart swallows the other parts. It's from 1960 to 1990. And the ecstasy is that we are living, we have our cell phone, and we have stuff to, quote, distract us or to engage us while we go through the misery of the chemical body failures. We have there's the hospital. Constant tending of everything with media that you can engage. So, what do you describe? How do you describe this? It's pretty interesting. And you could put up five science fiction guys. They all have different scenarios. Just put their movies up there. Okay, this is an approximation. This is it's like Fitting's Wake ends in a triptych. You know, stained glass window with three scenes. You put up three scenes. That's how you're living. That's your quadriphenic experience. So then, you know, there is a plague, chemical body plague, of people doing fentanyl and all these drugs in middle America all over the place in the small towns. You've heard of that, right?
Yes, sir.
There is a modern citizen, modern chemical body, that has no training at all and no even fake training, like, oh, I got a PhD, you know, I know something. So the masses are out there totally wiped out, just lying there in their kitchen or in their bedroom, stoned and addicted. The devastation to people. Like, remember the image of China 100, 200 years ago when the Opium Wars happened and the British, addicted. And you have images of the Chinese people just laid out in their opium dens. That's what we got here. We got global dens all over the place.
Correct.
So the apocalypse, the Armageddon apocalyptic imagery from the Bible is puny compared to what's actually going on. And that makes you understand why Joyce had to be so extreme in presenting Finney's Wake, because he said, that's where we're close to already, and we're going to. We're going towards. Am I still on a roll?
Yeah, I think so. Can you say something about the triptych at the end of Finnegan's Wake?
Yeah, what is that? It's there's the scene of St. Patrick arguing with the old druid. There's the scene of the Porter family, the couple, after their kid has a nightmare and they deal with that, they go and they attempt to copulate, and it's flashed onto the their bedroom screen or something. So the people walking by in the morning as the sun's coming up, they can see them screwing. Okay, that's another image. And I actually can't remember the third one. Let's see. Maybe it's ALP.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's the river.
Or it's ALP looking at her dead husband. And she's got the newspaper, the letter that she writes to the media to defend her husband's scandal. But actually, you know, it's funny. I've kept that in my mind about the triptych, but I haven't thought about the three images in a long time. Actually, I'm not sure. I know one is a debate. Not sure. Let me just Google that, see if it comes up. The triptych and Finney's Wake at the end. Now, this should come up, right? Everything's on here. Finney's Wake. Three scenes. Chapter 3, Section 3. Oh, yeah, Kevin. Kevin's the Irish saint on a little island.
Yeah.
So it's Kevin, the debate, and... maybe Shem's doing something, but I can't see no triptych images coming up. Finney's Wake. So that would be chapter 3, section 3. No, we want Jan. Let me see.
You want book 4, right?
No, book 4 is book 1. It's going back into, it's just basically, you're right. Wait a minute. Yeah, Berkeley, the debate is page 620. So that is in the fourth book. Oh, okay, I'll put in fourth book. Book 4, Finney's Wake.
Because I like this idea of different stained glass panels.
Yeah.
Kind of illuminating each other.
Okay, so I'll put in four scenes, see if that works. Three scenes. Are the porters in the fourth book? I got to go look. I got to get my Finney's Wake. Okay, so in this version of Finney's Wake, the porters, yeah, this is where the port. No, I got to check. No, porters is book 3.
Well, Porter is always there as spirit, right?
And what do you mean? The door?
No, so Porter is the spirit that animates the whole. So it's not just family or not just the bar pub. It's also the evanescence of the whole book.
Why Porter? What's the meaning of Porter there?
Well, I mean, Porter is another name for Guinness, right?
For what?
Guinness.
Oh, okay, drink. Yeah, whiskey. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the spirit of drink. Yeah, so book 3, chapter 4, starts at page 555, goes up to 589 or so. It is not book 4. It's book 3, the fourth chapter is the Porters. That goes up to 590. So then Berkeley and them, they're page 620 about. I'm pretty sure Kevin is one of the images. So mm-hmm. Let's see, where is this 610? I want to show you how he ends this. Yeah, so it's 611 and 612. It starts off the top of 611, line 3. Here are the details. Oh, I'll just read the... So it's got Muta and Juva replaying Mutt and Jeff from page 16. Let's see if you got that right. Let us do a little Finney's Wake here. Maybe that's why. Mutt and Jute. So that's caveman, original man, or the original interaction between two humans, the beginning of communication. That's page 16 to 20, or to 18. And then you have a replay of that in book 4 of Muta and Juva, rather than Mutt and Jute. Okay?
Yep.
So they're talking 609, and then it goes into Rhythm and Color at Park Mooting, Paradise Last, or Paradise Lost, Paradise Last in the Grand Natural, Veli Vision Victor, television as Victor, Dubs New Stage, Old Time Turf Tussle, that's the endless news, 24/7, recalling Winnie Willie Widger, two draws, so that implies two ties, right, cancellations, heliotrope, now he describes TV, page 349, as a heliotropical no time, so he refers back showing this is about television. Heliotrope leads from harem, three ties. Jockey the Roper jerks Jake the Rape. Pad Rock and Bookley chat. So that's Patrick, Pad Rock, and Berkeley is Bookley, B-O-O-K, right? It's
yep.
New media. And then he goes, and here are the details. And it says Tunk, T-U-N-C. This is Bimby, Bullocky, Vampus, Tappany, Bobs, Topside, Joss, Pigeon, Bella, Bulkley, Arch Druid of Islish, Chinchin Joss, in the his heptachromatic, seven-hued, septi-colored, roaring, yell-green, Lindigan mantle finish. He show along the his Mr. Guest, Pathlick, not Catholic, Pathlick with a P, with Al belonging him, the hose throat hum, with of samer time all the his Cassock Groner fellows, of Gray's friary family, he fast all time, what time all him, monk of fellows with same Pathlick. Now, what I'm reading here is every damn fucking video on YouTube now, okay? This
yep.
language is so perfect for describing the multimedia people take in every day. Once you know how to read it this way. The same Pathlick, quonium, speeching. Yeah, not speeching. See? Not speaking. He's speeching. No man, liberty is. He drank up words. Sicilet. Tomorrow till recover will not. Not going to recover. All too many much illusions through photoprismic vilamina of hueful panepiphanal world spectacurum of Lord Joss. the of which zoanthelitic furniture, from mineral through vegetable to animal. You see, he's always throwing in little glimpses of cliche evolutionary unfolding. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
Retrieval of Gutenbergian evolution, literary evolution, you know, of forms. So it says here, from mineral through vegetable to animal, not appear to full up together fallen man, then under but one photo reflection, there's your photography, of the several iridals gradations of solar light, that one which that part of it, fernet of who penopy world, had shown itself. See, there's media self-reflexive, part of fur of hue and pun war, unable to absorb air, whereas for number one pure dude seer, S-E-E-R, in seventh degree of wisdom of Entis Anton. So you've got this occultist, ritualistic, tribal, Freemasonic guy, Berkeley, and he's up against the Catholic literate Patrick. So it goes on, their debate for two pages, and it started off with punk, and then about 80% down it gets to punk, P-U-N-C, rather than T-U-N-C. And it says, Big Seer refracts the petty padre. So the petty padre is Patrick. Big Seer is Berkeley. Or Berkeley. It's also Berkeley in the Gutenberg Galaxy, besides the high priest of tribal stuff in Ireland. Big Seer refracts the petty padre, whackling it out, a tumble to take, tripeness to call thing, and to call if say is good, while you poor chiaroscuro, remember black and white TV is chiaroscuro,
yep.
McLuhan used to talk about. And he has right there, chiaroscuro, black and white paddy-inger. So he's the literate guy. He's black and white. He's the book guy. But this was posterior-prismically apostrophied and paralogically paralyzed celestial from Principalis of Irisman's ruin boon pot before, for being time monk blinkers, time blinged complementarily murk blankered in the neutralysis between the possible veriditude of the sager and the probable eruberation of the saint. As my propinkish to me wipe himself nose gates, a hand caught sheaf of synthetic chamois rag to hims hers, seeming such 4-3-2 agreement cause heart to be might, saving to Balonark, he kneeleth. To great Balonark, he kneeleth down. To greatest great Balonark, he kneeleth down quite sumly. The sound saw simple, or symbol. Remember tinkling symbol in Understanding Media?
Yes,
telephone,
sir.
Tinkling symbol. So he's got here, the sound saw simple in a weed-weighed world of the fire there, the sun in his holo cast, or in his halo cast, or holocaust, or biblical, what is it, the Holy Ghost. And then it says, on men, or amen. Then he goes, that was thing, by Goddard, the thing. Now here's, St. Patrick wins the debate, apparently, and no one knows how he did it. So they're going, that was the thing, by Goddard, the thing, by God, the very thing, begad, even to up to pity Bilkley, 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 who was for shouting down the shadow on the Lamb of Jesus, sweating on to stalker and throw his seven, as he shook his thumping four features at the hoy hop of his arse. And then it says thud, T-H-U-D, period. And that's it. Now, Don Thiel pointed out that thud is the 11th thunder. There's 10 thunders.
Sure.
And then in this replay, it's condensed, and it's the word thunder without N-D, without N-E-R. It's T-H-U-D. It's thud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, that's the kind of ending. Then it'll go, you get that 612, and then you go through more interesting stuff, the after image of the debate, and then you get to this in the middle of 614. Fin sense a worn, tuck up those wide shorts, the pink of the busket for sheer give, peeps, stand up to hardware and step into style. McLuhan used to quote that, step up. Stand up to hardware and step into style, that's software. Style is. If you soil may, pew it, gew it me preves, for new man mon, so So new man, for new man month, said a merge to the merge of unnotions. Can't get a notion going. Can't get a thought. Too much happening. Initian won's a game. So that's almost like a Harold Innes. Initian won's a game. So then it says, what has gone? How it ends? Two question marks. What has gone? How it ends? And then it says, begin to forget it. It will remember itself from every side, with all gestures, in each our word. Today's truth, tomorrow's trend. That's describing the 20th century. The hospital of media in the global membrane, in the Android meme, is remembering itself all the time. You don't have to remember anything. It'll be right there for you. Right? It's there in the media surround. Yeah. And so then, because that it'll remember itself from every side with all gestures in each our word. Now, there is trying to go beyond words. Gestures in each our word. Today's truth, tomorrow's trend. Then it says, forget, remember. See? Remember to forget. How do you do that? You're supposed to forget. I'm not going to remember. But it's telling me to remember to forget. In other words, you can't remember and you can't forget. You're in this central nervous system situation. Post-ESP, post-communication. That's what's happening here. You can't have total forgetfulness, and you can't have total remembering, but you're stuck oscillating between two glimpses of those former brain actions.
Yeah.
So it says, forget, remember. Then it says, have we cherished expectations? Are we for liberty of perusiveness? Why after what for where? A plain plan Lithium assemblements, Eblanius conglomerate horde by dim Delty diva. And then it says, forget! Exclamation mark. Reminding you to forget. And then the paragraph that Thiel always quoted, he had a whole chapter made up of these 20 lines. He would quote this in every book. So here, this is a summary of Finnegan's Wake. This is Joyce telling you what you've just experienced. So it starts our whole mole mill wheeling Vico cyclometer. So there's Vico, there's the bicycle, and you look at the image on page 293 in the middle of the book, it's like two wheels of a bicycle. But it's a Vico cyclometer. And then it has a tetradomational gazebo croticon. An icon is in gazebo croticon. So you got a tetradic icon. The mammalusia known to every schoolboy scandler, be he Matty, Marky, Lukey, or John Adonk. Autokinetically, there's a great word, autokinetically pre-provided, effects preceding causes, with a clapper coupling smelting works ex-progressive process. It's not progressive, it's ex-progressive. In brackets, for the farmer, his son, and their homely codes, their homely ghosts, known as egg burst, egg blend, egg burial, and hatches, hatch can. So after you're born, you're married, and you're buried, egg burst, egg blend, egg burial, you then keep living in the ICU, and you hatches, hatch can. It's all random creativity. So all that receives through a portal, there's your portal, receives through a portal vein, the dialytically separated elements of precedent or precedent decomposition for the very pet purpose of subsequent recombination so that the eroticisms, catastrophes, and eccentricities transmitted by the ancient legacy of the past, then there's a semicolon, and then it gives the different means of transmitting ancient legacy, type by tope, letter from litter, word at ward, with sendence of Sundance. Since the days of Pluny and Columcellus, where Giacinta, Provenci, and Margaret swayed over the all-too-ghoulish and illyrical and inhumantic in our mutter nation, all, now here's a good bunch of words, anastomosically assimilated and preter-identified paradidiotically. So para, idiotically. So there's a great summation here. Anastomosically assimilated and preter-identified periodi idiotically. In fact, the same old game-bold atomic structure of our Phineas the Old One as highly charged with electrons as hop hazards can affect of it. See, there's your electric thing. As highly charged, this old Phineas, he's now highly charged with electrons as hop hazards can affect of it. So all that may be there for you, cock-a-lura-lura-lura-luminos, that's the rooster in the morning. So all that may be there when cup, platter, and pot come piping hot, as sure as herself pits hen to paper and their scribing scrawled on eggs. So there it is, the whole book. And then it says, of cause so, S-O, exclamation mark. And in effect as? It's a question, A-S. So it's of cause so. So I've given you the causes. And in effect as what? As question mark. And then it gives the end of the book is ALP, her monologue, you know, redoing Molly in Ulysses, and basically stating the letter once again. So that's the last scene. So going back to Kevin should be, Kevin's on 604, and then the debate is on 610. So what is the first, the third verse? Is there something looking, the whole scene of a chart emerges on the beginning of book four. There's a lot of Buddhist, Hinduist chanting, and it's also a cab driver calling out to people. It is. Is it calling all downs? Calling all downs to Dane. Raise your erection.
What? And it's a control tower as well.
Yeah. And then it says near the bottom, a hand from the cloud emerges holding a chart expanded. That's my chart. And so then it goes on explaining the chart and talking about a child. I'm not sure if there's an image in here before you get to Kevin. It does say on page 598, the herb it orbs. So it's like a scene from 2001. You're out in space, you know, looking at the at Earth or something. The herb it orbs. Then's now, with now's then, intense continuant. So, see, there's where we're living. Then's now, with now's then, intense continuant. And then it says heard. All this is heard. Who having has, he shall have had. Here, upon the thud, strokes, truck, chim. It will be exactly so, fewer hours by so many minutes of the ope of the diurn, of the senite, of the main, of the year, of the age, of the man of Amatora, of gross guy, and little lady. Did I hear you laughing?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it gets into Brown and Nolan. They're always repeated. You know, I'm really not sure. Okay, it gets into Kevin, and he's in the pool. So what is the whole scene with ALP, the third scene? Maybe Muta and Juva. No, they're anticipating the debate. So that's interesting. Right now, I'm not sure what the third scene is. Third triptych. So
I think it's the river. I think it's...
You mean the last line?
No, the whole monologue at the end.
Yeah, okay, That's the ALP scene, I'm calling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, let's say that's it. But I'm not seeing, so I know it's book four, Finney's Wake, three scenes. They, in book three, chapter four, when they're doing the porter's bedroom, they have the three or four sex positions, and each one of the evangelists is identified with a particular sex position. So that's a bunch of posturing before you get to the final book. But let's see, where could I get the? Why can't someone tell me what the three scenes are? See, where's my ESP? It's not working.
I don't know. I'd say it's working pretty well.
Yeah, it's okay.
All things don't need to be answered.
Right, yeah. Book 2, Chapter 3, How to Read Finnegan's Wake, You know, if I went into the garage, I've got about 6 copies of Finnegan's Wake with notes. One of them probably has them in there. So I'll go look at some point, maybe next time. We'll see if I did enumerate the 3 scenes somewhere in the book. But it's not in this one. This is a newer book with less notes, a newer copy. So, okay, where are we at? Let's get back
to it. One place where we're at is that we started off talking about a transition from between languages. And here you were reading Finnegan's Wake with tremendous skill, I would say.
Thank you.
Obviously, you've done a lot of practice,
yeah.
and you've become acclimatized,
yes.
To this language. And it's, again, like the adult trying to teach the baby to talk. But now, instead of encouraging the baby to make its own sounds, you're trying to introduce the new sounds,
yes.
To the baby. And so it's both an illustration of what we were talking about before and a going beyond what we were talking before.
Yeah, and the last bit I read, he yells out, "Here!" Exactly what you just said, trying to get the person to see, the baby to hear the new sounds and a
yep.
new way of the ear. There's a new earscape that's not just the ear. And synesthesia, you can see why people in the middle of the global theater in the 60s started being attracted to LSD and having this synesthesia experience. As McLuhan said, they were trying to match with what they were already getting unconsciously, the global theater synesthesia.
Right, but the mistake was in the matching.
Yeah. But then the trend is to the digital, which is the co-anesthesia. This is what's not known by 99% of humanity or all joy scholars. They don't know. Yeah, we know about synesthesia, but co-anesthesia, as Steele points out, is gradually putting you at the center of the driving mechanism. You are at the center in your digital surround now. You make the environments. You input them. You sculpt them. That's co-anesthesia, being put in the driver's seat more and more.
Yeah. But the you can't be mistaken for the Gutenbergian you.
Did you say you, Y-O-U?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's right. You're not getting into the panopticon, though most people take it as a panopticon.
Right. So the you is a question. It's not the answer.
Yeah, that would be in effect as, see, that's so perfect what he says. The effect of all this, he's not sure. It's as what?
Yeah.
We haven't got a metaphor for it. You're not panopticon. Uh-huh. You're not this. You're not that. You are a super angel. You're everywhere at once. You can't visualize the seat that you've been put in the center of. You can't hear it.
See, as what question mark is a perfect representation of the language in Finnegan's Wake, because it seems like the question mark is a termination of the as what.
Yep.
Right? But actually, it's the answer to as what.
That's right. So he sums up the whole, he's always summing up the book at different places. Like that long session, Homo Mule Wheeling Vehicle Cyclometer, the 20 lines, that's a paragraph, a great summary paragraph of all the directions going on. But yeah, you have here forget, remember, and then you have of cause, so, and in effect, as. And he could have written at the first beginning of the book. He said, okay, I'm going to try to write you something, but I'm not sure if I'm ever going to get metaphor one for you. This I can't make a metaphor. I can't tell you what this is like. He says that right there. And that is a transitional point, because then it goes into the final scene of the river, which is what your eternal present that's unfolding. And in my mind, I read a couple of phrases, the continuant, that are talking about the ongoing present that has the pressure on everybody, that we're endlessly engaging now. So it makes a lot of sense, man. I talk myself into epiphanies all the time, for freak's sake, with this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's what we've done, or what you have done, I should say, is you've opened a kind of trap door.
Yeah.
That leads out of your pamphlet over to the wake.
That's right. And then it goes to my chart, which is based on the wake, which has the five bodies in it. You know, I have the five members of the family of the five quadrants. But mm-hmm. There's your portal. This pamphlet has a portal to all kinds of things.
Yeah, the portal is the porter.
Yeah. So it's perfect that, I mean, that's French for door, opening door, to porte or something.
Yeah, a porte is to cross or to carry.
Right, but the door, isn't it to open a door is
porter? Yeah, la porte.
Yeah, so
is the door. Yeah.
So it's great that he changes the the Earwicker family, Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker. They become the porters, which then is all the different media, which are different doorways to different aspects of what happened to the Earwickers.
Yep.
Amazing. And so you get endless pattern recognition as you learn how to deal with the wake. Endless patterns, creativity comes out of you. And that allows you to speak back to the Android meme or the tech body. You can talk back. Okay, you're going to throw all this bombardment at me? I'm going to bombard you back. Here's, when Marg Stewart broke her hip, McLuhan sent her a pizza, and it just had written on it, "The medium is the message." But then another time, he sent something else, and he said, "Here's mud in your eye." So he was always, playing off this bombardment scenario, even to his own secretary, which he's laid up in the hospital. He never stopped working.
Yeah, by working, you mean talking.
Talking, enhancing, attacking, massaging you, trying to see if you can keep up with his mind, his pattern recognition. Wouldn't even call it a mind.
Yeah, he was constantly channeling.
That's right. Conscious mediumship. Conscious mediumship.
Yeah.
So, let's see what we got here. After the hospital, let's see what I'm going to read the next part. After that's our modern hospital, and I'm talking about the new bodies. Our corporate vestments now are small enough, so the landscapes or corporate vestments are small enough to be considered as organs, like lungs, that are new additions to our archetypal chemical body and astral body. Then I say, the chemical body is what most people consider to be their physical body in quotes. The dominant model for this is the product of Western science since the telegraph. The astral body is what, now, Western science is a cartoon statement of all the technologies that started happening in the 19th century, right? All the explaining and interpreting and the technologies, that's Western science. The dominant model for this is the product of Western science since the telegraph. The astral body is what pervades all cultures. The belief there is more to our makeup than the chemical body. It is a huge storehouse of religious and spiritual energy. The third organ is the TV body, the repository of historical one-way analog broadcasting. The fourth is the chip body, the mutating warehouse, there's your archive, of digital omnidirectional media. The fifth is the mystery body, what we're still excavating and whose lineaments we cannot fully assess yet, if ever. We now know it's made up of the previous four bodies, the mystery body, is made up of the previous four bodies, but we don't know what more we will discover about its constituents, effects, and effects. The Android meme is a resultant And that's a technical term, resultant, right? Is that in geometry?
Maybe.
Let me put that up.
It's not a common word, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think it has a technical meaning. That's why I picked it. Resultant.
Some kind of resolution of forces, maybe.
Yeah, it says something that results, outcome. Specifically, the single vector that is the sum of a given set of vectors.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the single vector that is the sum, stands in for the sum, is not the sum, actually. The Android meme is the resultant of the, so that's what we, our tactility coheres our perceptions in our minds, our brains, and then collectively, the Android meme is the image of the day that dominates, because it's the resultant of the interplay, violent and ecstatic, of the first four bodies. So the news is somebody trying to wrap up the day with some iconic statement. Okay, this is what your day meant today. So I'm just going to go over to Drudge. Let's see what the they're already into Thursday. Let's see what their iconic image, the resultant, is for July 13th.
I didn't know that Drudge was still going.
Yeah. I think he sold it. I heard that he sold it.
Well, he died, didn't he?
No, he's still going. Well, according to Ian, he was murdered. But, you know, who's going to believe that? So just so for the record, who's dead? Hillary and Bill Clinton, Putin, Biden, most of the criminals in the Trump administration, you know, the FBI guy Comey, all those guys that everybody wants to put in jail, they're all dead. They're done off by somebody's assassination squad. And then who did I just start off with? Trump's still alive. Bill Clinton, he's gone. Didn't I mention someone right off at the beginning? Oh, Drudge. Yeah, Drudge is gone. Okay, so it says here, Hollywood actors. Remember, everybody's an actor in the global theater. Hollywood actors poised for strike after studio talks end without deal. Developing. So, remember in the Do Line. Do you have the Do Lines?
I have it in electronic form, yeah.
Okay. One of them is called Strike the Set.
Yes.
Right? That's the strike. That's what's happening here. Hollywood actors are trying to strike the set, trying to stop the world and get off. So here is what the icon for today says. Summer surprise, inflation finally eases, 3% lowest in years, end of Fed emergency, but food still up. So the digital statistical reality is okay, but for the chemical body, you ain't going to eat. You can't afford food. So multiple dynamics going on.
Yeah.
AI doomsday scenarios gaining traction in Silicon Valley. Quote, I think we're all going to die. There's nostalgia. Hey, buddy, we died 30, 40 years ago. It was Planet of the Dead in the 70s. As Twitter continues to implode, advertisers' eye threads. Ocean temperatures off Florida hit 97 degrees. Update, Chinese hackers breach email of Commerce Secretary and State Department officials. On it goes. On and on and on. Okay, let's get back to making sense. I was reading about what? What did
you were reading about the four bodies and the fifth one.
The resultant. Yes.
Yeah. So, in the middle of this paragraph, you say the fifth—that is to say, the fifth body—is the mystery body.
Yeah.
And then you go on and you say it's made up of the previous four bodies.
Yes.
Right. But then you say that the Android meme is the resultant of the first four bodies. So you seem to correlate the android meme with the mystery body.
Yeah, so I'm playing four off of five. Frank Cingroni told me that Western alchemy is four levels, four aspects. Chinese, Asian alchemy is five. So it's 4-5. So I talk about the four quadrants, but there's five there. But that's because the fifth one, the Dobbs quadrant, contains the four. So it is the invisible tactility framework. So you've got five bodies, which contain the four, but it must include the eschatological, the fourth level of exegesis, which McCune defined as grasping for straws. The android meme is an eschatological environment. It is the mastery body. They're interchangeable. But there's more than just the mystery body. So the android meme includes all of them, right? So it's four and five. So then I say, after saying the android meme is the resultant of the interplay, violent and ecstatic, of the first four bodies, I claim this five-body paradigm is a lot more useful or comprehensive when applied to our post-911 scene than Samuel Huntington's Clash of Civilizations probe. And then, so now I'm offering my paradigm against the Trilateral Commission guy, the Bilderberger guy, Samuel Huntington, Mr. Kushner's boy. Remember, there's a line McLuhan says somewhere that the elites today are the ones who determine what the big patterns are. Have you ever seen that quote?
No, but
I'll have to send it to you.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. It's in some obscure thing. It's in my Perfect Pitch newsletter, but I'll send it to you. So, yeah, it might be like in some interview around the time he was talking at Etcetera magazine, one of those 77 or so, 1977. So he, but the point is that the actual elites are the ones who get to say what the big icon is, what the big meaning is, and therefore determine the parameters of the word that makes the market.
Yeah, like you were just reading from Drudge.
Yes. So, let's see, I said the fifth. So the mystery body is what we're still excavating and whose lineaments we cannot fully assess yet. Now, I came up with the fifth body in the late 90s. To me, Ion came forth. And I, adopting my language, said, yes, we are the mystery body, and we're going to make it normal. We're going to explain all the mysteries. So it has been absorbed. It's now an art form. It's now knowable. And that means we're in the hexadic, which the tiny note points to. You remember at the bottom it says this hex advertisement, the whole tiny note chart.
But why does the fifth point beyond itself to the sixth?
Because I was inspired in New York when I did this in 95 by Carolyn's technology she was there working on, which was called MIR. And it could treat AIDS and all kinds of things. It was a breakthrough medical thing, but it was not supported in any way, so it faded off to the sidelines. And then Ion came in to bring in new stuff, even better than MIR. But Ion is very good at describing what MIR could do. So I was inspired. I said, all that we're doing, basically the patriarchy created all this stuff. And to me, Carolyn represented what, quote, the feminine could do. Not feminism, not that literate stuff, but she was bringing in the new technologies. So I imagine that Carolyn was looking back at all that men, in quotes, did, and how she had something better than all that they did. So I used to say that I was the coolest man, last man standing, because I could communicate to Carolyn. I could explain what we did and say, now, okay, yeah, we were all assholes, but there were a few things you people need to know, you so-called females, because you're not females anymore. So the chart is a message to whatever is not male. You know, the Baudrillard and them call it the femme fatale or the feminine. The feminine is what they call it. And so that, which he said was seduction and was mystery. So there's a mystery aspect of the first extension. You know, in the Bible, women are the first extension, right?
Yeah.
So the new extension takes over, the first extension then takes over. So that's what the hexadic was. It was all about moving beyond regular science because regular science couldn't explain what the mirror device could do. It had other things going on that science didn't have. Now, we've got that up to the yin-yang with our technologies today. It's even more of that. Science can't understand it. So that's what inspired the chart. All these developments with Zappa, McLuhan, May Brussel, and all the people that are featured there as anti-environments, ersatz anti-environments, to what the direction was of the mistaken patriarchy or the mistaken technological dynamo, whatever you want to call it, that has experienced a rupture, which takes you into the hexadic. So that's why at the bottom, the chart, the Tino chart, is an ad for the hexadic. So it's the hex advertisement.
Yeah. Would I be right to think that the chart, as it gets down towards the bottom, is like getting towards the flame of a Bunsen burner, and the Bunsen burner is vaporizing the chart. The chart is, as it's being vaporized, is being expressed in a new way to a new recipient. And
exactly.
this new way and new recipient is the sixth body.
Right. And the that's why the quadrants are subatomic particles. They have hardly any lifespan. They're just instances, quadrillions of a second kind of thing. That's how quick the last stages are before you move into this new, even stranger situation. So, yeah, the burning up of it applies. It's melting in your hands as you look at the chart, just like a page of Finning's Wake is.
Yes.
So there we are. Okay, so the emperor means – there you have it. You know, after – have you ever seen me the Canadian Embassy consulate, they had a lecture series in New York late 90s, and it opened with Tom Wolfe in February 1999. You ever seen that?
Yeah.
You've seen that.
Yeah, I've often complimented you
on what I said
and how you tried to straighten them out.
and at the end of it, he goes, "There you have it." That's what I was just quoting.
That's right.
There you have it.
Because he didn't have any other response.
No, he didn't know. He's stunned. He was stunned. He'd never met a McLuhanite who knew what he was talking about.
Correct.
Yeah, and so here we have this. Great statement about the five bodies. And then I go into Samuel Huntington. You know who he is, eh? You've heard of him?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah. So he coined, he's a part of the elite who determines the definitions of where we're at. The clash of civilizations, right? Gutenberg stuff. Samuel Huntington was the establishment's, in brackets, trilateral commission's academic. He was the man who made up this simple little pattern. Quote, "Today we have a clash of civilizations." This actually kept the frame in the war mode. He didn't define it as more than war. It is more than war. And that's where McLuhan teases out all the levels of World War III. It's not just a clash of civilizations. That's why I'm putting Huntington down. He's the establishment sociologist, strictly 19th century. The last time there was an establishment for the chemical body was the 19th century. So then, so that's a good statement. And then I say, in the past 30 years, the media landscapes have slowly transformed into additional miniaturized bodies attached to our original body like barnacles. And I'm thinking of James Joyce's wife as Nora Barnacle, right?
Yeah.
The original body was made by, quote, first nature, unquote. Our descriptions of that first nature constitute our human-made second nature. So our language about first nature is the beginning of second nature, which is human-made, not whoever made first nature or whatever made it. Mm-hmm. Some claim
but it's important to point out that made, the word made, is completely different there between first and second nature.
Yeah.
Right? Made is like, for first nature, that's like creation or evolution.
Yeah.
Whereas in the second, it's transformation.
Yeah, it's human made.
Yes. But human, again, not as chemical body.
Right. Some claim to be getting past our second nature descriptions of first nature and are subsequently witnessing first nature. Others accept the organisms created by our second nature descriptions and consider them to be improvements on our first nature. I say we don't yet completely know what first nature is, so I wouldn't say we no longer have first nature bodies. But our chemical body, the dominant second nature description of our first nature body, is presently subsumed by the TV and chip bodies, our invisible barnacles. Now, once Ion showed up, I've, quote, learned from Ion that there's no difference between first and second nature. That Ion's a total McLuhanite, you know. Nature right. is human-made or is a technology.
Sure. There is, according to McLuhan, first nature was based on ignorance. And that when it became understood that art and nature were complementary, then there was no first nature.
Right. Okay. So and that seems to be what Ion's saying. Because Ion's saying yeah. the tech body, which is the pinnacle of the second nature, is, you know, as viable as whatever you think original nature is, or original being.
Uh-huh.
So the TV, subsumed by the TV and chip bodies, our invisible barnacles. As I wrote above, the homeopathic cliche probe became the digital meme. Now, that's where I try to go past McLuhan talking about the verbal module that Joyce and Pound did. He talks about that in From Cliché to Archetype. So you have the verbal module, which is also a cliché probe. Then you have this environmental cliché probe, which then gets etherealized, or whatever you want to call this refinement, into the digital meme. Right? So I'm trying to make a distinction there. And the meme took over. You know, people talk about memes today, and 10, 15 years ago, they never heard of the word. But it became the word of choice. So my poetry picked the right name for where we were that would evoke the popularization of the word meme.
So don't these phrases here, Bob, need to be explained or amplified in terms of the Android meme and the AP? When you say homeopathic cliche probe and then you say digital meme, aren't these kind of reverberations of the Android meme and the AP?
Yeah, that's Hendiades, one by means of two.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at this massive essay I did on the American Classroom Without Walls and how I go through all the major postmodern French writers and I show mm-hmm. quotes from them and they're replaying quotes from McLuhan. So I refer to all these quotes that McLuhan said at first. And then and there's like five sections of it. Then the sixth section, and the fifth section is all about the Android meme, and then the sixth session, I called it Act 6, has one sentence. It says, you're looking at it.
Yeah.
So that's what I think of when you ask me about the Hendiades of digital meme versus Android meme versus Healy cliche probe. There's hard to make distinctions there. But I am going to try to explain that. I think that's what's
okay,
coming
good.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to, you know, tease apart some distinctions here. So as I wrote above, the homeopathic cliche probe became the digital meme. Then I say in blue, it's leading into the meme and then the Android synthetic meme.
Yeah, there you go. Look at that.
See, I'm doing, it's called both and. It's the and part, right? You can't stop. anything you say is not adequate. So you got to keep saying something.
Yeah, that's the quantum.
Yeah, the eternity of the quantum. Derek de Kirchhoff provides a useful description of the fusion aspect of a small portion of the second phase of the Android meme. The second phase, small portion, is time, space, and the self. They're puny, basically the chemical body world. So de Kirchhoff provides a useful description of the fusion aspect of a small portion of the second phase of the Android meme. So he's not covering the whole Android meme. He's just doing a small part of it. So do I have a de Kirchhoff essay at the bottom or something? I don't know what I have. Do I have to?
You have a link. You have a link there. I just clicked on it. Let's see. Three looming figures of the digital transformation by de Kirchhoff.
Yeah. So I'm talking about that essay. Okay. So I'm talking about the inadequateness of it. Inadequacy.
Yeah. So if memory serves, he took some of this off the internet.
Yeah. That's where he got that quote wrong.
To credit it.
Right? He got that quote wrong about McLuhan predicting the computer world.
Yeah.
Okay, so I say de Kirchhoff makes much significance out of the cancellation of time, space, and the self. But if you read my cloning ESP essay, time gets canceled out in the 19th century and space in the early part of the 20th century. He has them getting wiped out by the digital world 2.0, or the second phase of the Android meme. I'm citing Derek because he helps people see some basics, but it's actually quite obsolete. And it is. So I'm correcting de Kirchhoff there. Time, space, and the self. To write about that at this late stage is silly, right? You got to talk about something else. You got to talk about the five bodies or the Android meme itself or the cloning ESP. This is not useful to talk about time, space, and the self. Maybe for an 18-year-old so they can get a grip on reality with some concepts, but you got to massage them out of that eventually. So then I say, however, other portions of the Android meme underwent massive decentralization. So I'm talking about other portions that would be the other bodies, more than time, space, and the self. So other portions of the Android meme underwent massive decentralization and splayed effects, you know, destroyed, blown up, scattered, of this phase two of the Android meme, AM, which constituted a huge replay of phase one of the Android meme as content. Homeopathic cliche probes, you'll see my memo of Prince Charles written in 1987. I explained the phase we're coming into, homeopathic cliche probes, and that's before the internet, but it was predicting the internet. But it's the first phase of the internet. The co-anesthesia hasn't really kicked in until phase two or Web 2.0. That is the environment where the homeopathic cliche probes are the content. Okay? So in 87, I didn't have the Android meme idea. Well, it hadn't happened yet. But it did happen as an undercurrent from 1960 to 1990. So I'll read that again. However, other portions of the Android meme underwent massive decentralization and splayed effects of this phase two of the Android meme, which constituted a huge replay of phase one of the Android meme as content. So basically, 1993 to 2003 is phase one of the Android meme. Phase two comes in with MySpace, YouTube, Facebook. The Android meme phase two with the 1.0 as its content and also analog media, the after image of analog media. So that's me teasing apart the levels, the constituents of what we're looking at, which is going to end up with the tech body. McLuhan anticipated the homeopathic cliche probe with his use of the module, quote, module. Then I say, I had to come up with something that is like a meme. Holyopath Ecclesia Probe, no one knows what that means, so I had to find old words, and I did. These two paragraphs explain module. And that's the paragraphs coming up. So they are from Cliched Archetype, 1970, page 152 and 155. So here, note how McLuhan uses the word module. In contrast to private awareness, social consciousness is a process of scrapping, retrieving, and probing. So everybody is acting out the tetrad or quadriphenia, right? We're scrapping, yep. Retrieving, and probing, and extending. The emphasis, for the most part, is upon retrieval and the accumulation of vast residues. That would be the archives, the mini-states, right? The accumulation of vast residues. With the development in the 19th century of many new are you there?
Yes, sir. Okay. I'm following along.
Yeah. With the development in the 19th century of many new technologies, or cliches, because all technologies are cliches by the late date, especially hardware, are cliches. That's the
They're even cliches when they begin.
Right.
All technologies are shortcuts, and a shortcut is a cliche.
Yeah, and that's the meaning of from Cliched Archetype. So I'm trying to point that out highlighting how McLuhan uses technologies as cliches. With the development of the 19th century of the many new technologies, cliches, because remember, old archetype is new cliche. New archetype is old cliche. That's on the flap of the hardcover version of Cliched Archetype. You ever seen that flap? Talks about.
Well, I have it. Whether I took note of it is another question.
Yes, well, I took note of it, and it's important. With the development in the 19th century of many new technologies, cliches, the supremacy of unified print consciousness gave way to multi-consciousness, early term for quadriphenia. There was no garbage heap, no midden heap. There was no unconscious large enough. So that's interesting what the frame is here. There was no unconscious large enough to contain all of the materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing. So that's me getting into the scapes and the archives of analog media, the garbage heap of each one of them, the midden heaps. But there is this ongoing both and of the present that is not containing things but making you have a hard time getting your head around it. Right? There was no the new environment's always a new unconscious. So there was no more unconscious large enough to contain all the materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing. And so that's why in Playboy in 69 he talks about the content in italics is the new ground, and then he has in page 11 of Take Today that man is both figure and ground. That's what we're getting at. This starts to get to the anthropomorphic of what is the unconscious large enough? Well, just claiming you're a human or something that's not the environment, right? You're something that's not the environment. Not sure what you're made up of anymore, but you still are trying to avoid the merger and loss of one's consciousness. That's another big thing here. And Take Today, he ends the book by saying, the recently achieved forms of consciousness, what are they? What are the recently achieved forms of consciousness? And I asked Barry Nevitt, and he said, Finnegan's Wake. So Finnegan's Wake is an unconscious large enough. There was no unconscious large enough to contain all the materials generated by the breakdown of so much probing and environing. That's why McLuhan says elsewhere in this book, Cliched Archetype, that creativity is a vast cliche. A lot of education, the ideal is to help kids become creative. Well, you're going to make them cliches. We need a new kind of creativity to hold up as a model or a goal of an image of where we're our faith is taking us.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, it's happening.
Yeah, it already is happening. It's all done deal. No matter what we come up with, it's happened.
Yep.
Philosophy and management alike, that's why science fiction's obsolete. Hollywood's obsolete, all their monster movies. Philosophy and management alike, you could say all those movies and all that science fiction is your obituary. What did you in? And did in the media environments. It's the unconscious today is to visualize the disappearance of what you can imagine was and has now disappeared. That's the task. Philosophy and management alike have yet to come to terms with the mini-module or the new structure of the electric age. See, that's very important. The mini-state is also a mini-module as it communicates in the TV landscape or in the TV body. The familiar ad form of rippling repetition of profiles, that's the iconic, is an accessible example of the mini-module that is found in every electric structure from space capsule to the modes of consciousness. Mallarmé and Joyce are masters of this kind of verbal module, which is achieved by pushing beyond semantic frontiers. So the mini-module that is found in every electric structure, I'm making an environment, and that's Holopathic Cliché Probe, right? The environment's a mini-module. The global theater, the Android means a mini-module. We are so, quote, tiny in it. We don't have the parameters of our chemical body.
Mm-hmm. Is a mini module escape?
Yep. The mini state has become a mini module. In the language of the TV and chip bodies, that's PR. That's communicating your brand, your business, your environment, your religion, your mythic stage is my term for it. To other mythic stages. That's the endless embutment of the mini-states against each other, and they are represented by the iconic mini-module. So, Subatomic quadrants.
What I hear you doing here is, at least on one level, is making a commentary on your reading of Finnegan's Wake.
Yes. Well, that's why the tiny note, you see, there's the other chart, I call it the big, forget what I call it, Bob's formula chart. And it's from 1750 to 2020, and at the top it has the five members of the Finney's Wake, and ALP is the hidden ground on the left, and HC is the figures, the bureaucratic figures of organizing society, the patriarchy, is under HCE, and then the three children are the environmental effects and probes. So Finnegan's Wake is the framework for the big chart. And then you look at one little lower level of the big chart, the formula chart, and you pull it out, and that's my tiny note chart. It comes out of the big chart. So, yeah, Finnegan's Wake is the ground of this. The ground of now.
But relating to that ground has a kind of grammar.
Yeah.
Right? And it's plain from how well you read The Wake that there's a language there that needs to be acclimatized.
Yeah.
And when you kind of do a retrospect on your acclimatization to The Wake, then what comes out is something like this pamphlet as a grammar.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing a science here. A grammar, the grammar part of science, or the original point of defining what's happening. But it's not a Gutenbergian definition. I do it, and then I go on the radio and act it out. Or do another version of it.
And where do you see this coming from? Do you see yourself as a student? Do you see yourself as a receiver? Do you see it as creative activity? How do you imagine this to yourself when you take a second to look back?
Well, in the 80s on CKLN, when people asked me, what was I, who was I, you know, when am I said, I'm an environment. So I started off saying, I was an environment. And then it got refined into Quadrophenia, and which is, you know, our basic doubleness, which Wyndham Lewis celebrated, which then is perverted into schizoid or schizophrenia. And then you have the Android meme simulating us, simulating our schizophrenia. So there's two schizophrenias. They merge, so we're all Quadrophenia. And it's hard to tell where the boundaries are between you and the Android meme. So the Android meme is quadriphenic too. So I always say I'm a quadriphenic and you are too, but I'm a conscious quadriphenic. You need to understand a little bit more how to describe what you are as a quadriphenic.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I say to my audience. So that's how I answer what I am. Then I have on the tiny note chart, which is autobiographical also, I've got categories in there, director, producer, lawyer. I have a lot of different categories of chemical body, archetypal positioning. I include all those. So that's how I'll say all kinds of stuff about what I am. So that's, and so I was acting out. Now, Thiel said that Marshall acted out his time. That's a good, profound statement. He acted out the symptoms of it. He always seemed to be ahead of it, but he was talking about what we were all going through and what was happening to us, but he was just a little ahead, so he said it first. But he was still subject to the transformations going on. So I include myself in that drama, the drama of cognition. But is, does that answer your question? Like you're asking?
A little bit. A little bit. I think it's. I don't think it's a question that can be answered in a sentence or two. All our conversations or your pamphlet are all kind of answers to that.
Yeah, I've been saying the same thing for so long, but I don't get bored with it. That's the exciting part about when you have the right language, the word remains rejuvenatable in yourself and in your perceptions, and you don't mind. Somebody who's not paying attention to me, you just sort of somebody talking after a few weeks. Bob just keeps repeating himself is how I'm going to be perceived, right?
Yeah.
A package awareness. I'm just offering a package that, of course, people are going to get bored with. And they thought McClune was doing that, becoming boring. They missed the liveliness of when you're actually describing reality, talking back to something, and it's invigorating when you're accurate about it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what I am. I'm accurate. I'm precise. Yeah, I never stopped this. So it's great to have someone who's understanding it. So I did that quote from Cliched Archetype. It explains what we've been doing tonight. And then I say in the blue part, philosophy and management alike, I'm quoting McLuhan, philosophy and management alike have yet to come to terms with the mini module or the new structure of the electric age, which is the image, software patterns that become memes for the millennials and younger, expendable memes. I figured this out. I said, quote, wait a minute, how do I make homeopathic cliche probe have the same meaning as meme? Oh, module, yeah, McClune's got that, and from Cliched Archetype. I went, found it, typed it up, and wonder if wonders, module is McClune's term for meme. They talk about modules often in present-day art, and installations are considered modular. So,
yep.
Again, had the right word. He knew the word that was appropriate. So then we go to another page, page 14, where McClune says, the outer trip has been specialist in Western. The inner trip has been ecological and oriental. Both kinds of trips are cliche probes. Each has its own methods and preferences of retrieval from the rag and bone shop of past experience. The outer trip prefers to retrieve antiquities or archetypes. The inner trip prefers the probing cliche world of the module. That's another great paragraph. So you have, we were talking about the museums of television and Hollywood and all that. All these museums, as well as our regular environments, are cliche museums. Museums are warehouses containing antiquities, but they're also probes, because you can go into them and find some old thing, and it'll give you a different experience than the people who saw it in 1939, because you're a different makeup, that's different content, different user.
But, and you can also rearrange the stuff.
So rearrange, right. Yeah, I remember I dropped into the center in March 71. I remember talking to McLuhan. Trudeau had just gotten married in the first week of March 71, so that was a big story, because it was a secret or something. And so he made a little presentation in St. Michael's College one night. So he's up there on the podium with all these books laid out, you know, usually standing pontificating. But here he is. He's got four or five books open, flat, on this platform that he's sitting at. So I never saw him in that kind of, it's a scholarly, it's like a monk, you know, in a museum. In a library, quoting with all his texts. But he had a photograph behind him up on the wall, and it was the blandest photograph I'd ever seen. It was a shot from the coach house out onto that bland parking lot. That's what he had. He had a picture of the view from his office, or one part of the office. So, So he was telling us, I'm sitting here, co-anesthetized, I'm in the driver's seat, I got my texts here, which are old antiques, and I'm just commenting on what I see out my window, which was the photograph of his bland environment. So I thought that was pretty neat. That's how I interpreted it anyways at the time. And then about, he had already, I didn't know this, I don't think, till later when I got the archive, in the middle of February 71, a couple of weeks before I showed up there, the 1st of March, he had been on the panel with Auden and Bucky Fuller and a bunch of other local media people. Have you ever heard that panel?
I think I have. Was Mailer part of that?
No, it was W.H. Auden, Bucky Fuller, a couple of media people in Toronto, and McLuhan. And he and Auden got into sort of an argument. And McLuhan ends up telling Auden he had no clue about what TV's doing, and Auden's just bragging that he doesn't have one.
Yeah. No, I know the interview for sure. Yeah.
Or the dialogue. The panel.
Yeah.
And I think I told you in 72 I was in New York City, and I found out that Auden lived, he had an apartment on 8th Street, St. Mark's Place.
Uh-huh.
So I knocked on the door, and a guy answered, and he invited me up, and he said Auden was back in London. I guess he went there for the summer or something, and so this guy was subletting, or he was a friend. So we just got talking. Eventually, of course, I brought up McLuhan, and he said, I was here when Auden came back. He was on a panel with McLuhan, and he walked in the house or the apartment, and he said, I won! So me, as the McLuhan archivist, no one would know that. No one would ever find that out. I find out where Auden is, go see if he's approachable, and then I get this really more important revealing thing that the egomaniac Auden, who did lousy in it, he thinks he won because he got people laughing in the audience. You can hear it on the tape. He got more laughs than McLuhan, so he thought that meant he won. Maybe true. Maybe if you get the laughs, you won. Anyways, I didn't tell you that story before, right?
No.
Good. So we're talking about Auden, and so I missed the panel by 2 weeks, but I didn't know that till years later when I was in the CBC archives and found it in the late 70s. What are we doing now? So the outer trip and the inner trip, antiquities versus cliche world. That's a very important quote there, and it's my way of getting into the tech body. So we're talking about a module, holopathic cliche probes, archetypes, and the fact that these two trips are content. Outer trip is content. Inner trip is content, right? They're cliche probes. So then...
So do you use the word probe simply as a kind of another word for action?
Yeah. For me, it's action. It's still showing up, still performing. Where did I read that? Wyndham Lewis. He said he was I was reading this old book by him, and he said, I'm a performer. See? Not just a painter, writer, whatever. He's a performer, which, of course, the electric media makes everybody a performer.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody an actor. So, yeah, probing is maybe attempting to be conscious performer. But conscious doesn't necessarily mean... the chemical body, brain consciousness, that kind of awareness that the New Age sells, there's a different way to be conscious, you know?
Sure. That, it depends on a new language.
Yeah, there it is. So when you know these basic things, you see it showing up in pop culture, highbrow culture, all over the place. You see artists, managers, people trying to express their situation. And they're always bumping up against McLuhan and what they're trying to say. Like Jack Nicholson, I saw an article on him in the early 70s, and he said how much he was influenced by McLuhan. And here's what he was influenced by. He said, I read this book. It was all about the cliche. And I recognized that described me, this cliche action. That's what acting is. And he had this crazy notion, you know, hyper-subjective interpretation of the word cliché as spelling out what he was. And it was a big epiphany. It'd be great to find that quote. I have to look up some collection of Jack Nicholson interviews because it's very strange. It's a strange quote for that point, the way he interpreted it. He was
but
right.
Yeah, but it seems to me quite profound.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's profound. And he was correct.
You could see that... the actor's life, which is, in a sense, everybody's life, is just stringing together one cliche after another. And the what's needed for the new language is simply to be tuning in to the reverberations of the cliches.
You said reverberation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't say it properly. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah. But and you said it earlier wrong earlier. Anyways, that's interesting. He you might have gotten it that he had discovered that acting was cliche probing or something. You know what I mean? It really crystallized for him. So so that was pretty good. You know, Mary told me. I met this guy here, David something. Forget his last name. He was the last guy to propose a project to McLuhan. They were going to do a Malinowski. What's that guy's name?
Bronislaw.
Yeah, Bronislawski, Bronislaw, saying History of Civilization or something. They were going to do that with McLuhan and media with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me what?
Wasn't his name like Goldstein or
Goldberg?
Yeah,
his Jewish name,
like
Goldberg,
that?
David something Berg, yeah.
Yeah.
And he did a book on bamboo trees in Hawaii, if you look it up. David Goldberg, yeah, might have been Goldberg. But what was I going to tell you? So we're talking about cliche. I don't know. I don't know if I can remember it. What did he had a good anecdote. I don't remember right now. I don't want to get bogged down. So now we're on page 155. The retrieved archetypes are antiquities. Now, it's important that in Cliché Archetype, in the book, archetype is more visual space, and cliché is oral, preliterate, right? Did you notice that?
I didn't, but it makes sense to me.
Yeah. We don't have our you don't
which
have
explains
what?
Why they flip.
He flipped?
No, when you express cliche and archetype in terms of orality and visuality,
yeah,
it explains why they flip, because they each need the other.
Right, and you don't have archetypes, Jung or Freud or anything, in preliterate cultures. It's all cliche probe or ritual. You don't have the container visual bias aspect of archetypes. They're like frames that don't work in the electric age. So I have here the retreat.
So,
and he spells that out in cliche archetype. Not many people have said that. They don't notice that.
Yeah, it's that relates to technology as cliche that we talked about a long time ago.
Yeah.
In order to separate out cliche from archetype, you need to make a kind of shortcut through experience.
And so experience is the word.
Experience isn't like that, but it can be analyzed like that.
Yeah, the senses are cliches.
Yeah.
Cliche actions. So I have here, the retrieved archetypes are antiquities. That's people going to museums, institutions that have a heavy Western bias, an outer trip. The inner trip probes, quote, prefers the probing cliche world of the module. Web 2.0 users are inner trippers in extremis. The meme module brings fleeting order, to the Instagram and TikTok obsessions. My phrase, coined 30 years ago, Android meme, is le mot juste, and was more prophetic than any other digital nomenclature, such as virtual reality or artificial intelligence. It's just the word itself resonated, the word meme, for people to use today. They don't say virtual reality or artificial intelligence. They say AI, but in the conversation of what people are exchanging, they always talk about, you know, distributing memes. So, six schools of media ecology are the result of the Android memes replay of McLuhan in the 90s. And this is where the symptoms of quadrophenia make their entrance. McLuhan knew that he had to mime discontinuously the splintering after images of human/technological cognition to manifest an impossible anti-environment to the seduction affected by the poltergeist. Now, that's a big statement. I think we should end with that. How are we doing time-wise? We've done about two hours.
Yeah, just after six, we're doing fine.
So what do you think? That's a pretty big, important statement.
That's a great statement to end on.
Yeah, we want to spend a couple of days on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so awesome. Excellent.
Good.
Allow Bob to do a solo. I did a solo.
In the future.
What'd you say?
I say, I hope we do Finnegan's Wake again.
Oh, yeah, we can do it any time. Maybe we should make it a feature.
Absolutely.
Thanks for letting me do a solo tonight.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, it was good. Okay, well, thanks a lot, man. And good luck with your attempt to enframe the quantum physicists.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Cameron, thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.